I'm Alan Jones. Have you ever thought about joining the choir? Sunday evenings at 6:30 on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. 1 o'clock is the time. The news now read by John Shea.
British investigators have been in contact with their Swedish counterparts, who are investigating two terrorist attacks in Stockholm. A man believed to be a suicide bomber died. The Swedish Prime Minister, Fredrik Reinfeldt, has condemned the attacks as unacceptable. The authorities in Sweden have confirmed that an email was sent to police before the attack, referring to Sweden's presence in Afghanistan. The Home Secretary, Theresa May, has confirmed that demonstrators protesting over tuition fees on Thursday made physical contact with the Duchess of Cornwall inside a royal car. Clarence House has refused to confirm reports that she was poked with a stick. Scotland Yard says there's been a positive response to its release of pictures of 14 people wanted for questioning about the disturbances during the demonstrations in London against the rise in tuition fees. At least 11 people have died in a bomb blast in the Iraqi city of Ramadi. A suicide bomber detonated a car filled with explosives near government offices. Here, the government says it will consider banning a controversial American pastor from coming to the UK to address the ultra-nationalist English Defence League. Terry Jones caused international outcry earlier this year when he threatened to burn a copy of the Quran. Scotland's Schools Minister, Keith Brown, has been named as the country's new Transport Minister. It follows the resignation of Stuart Stevenson yesterday after criticism of his handling of the chaos caused by last week's severe winter weather. The heavy snowfall, which started during the rush hour on Monday morning, caused gridlock on Scotland's roads, with hundreds of people stuck overnight. Ministers have disclosed how much money will be paid to schools in England to improve the education of some of the poorest children. The pupil premium will be £430 for every child whose parents have an income below £16,000. The Chief Secretary to the Treasury, Danny Alexander, says the funds will help tackle inequalities, but Labour says it's not a new investment. And the weather. A chilly day with light, mainly northerly winds. Fog will clear to leave many parts dry with sunny spells. However, there'll be a continuing risk of showers along eastern coasts. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at almost 3 minutes past one.
And it was read by John Shea. Well, time now on Radio 3 for the Early Music Show, which today is presented by Robert Hollingworth.
In 1605, Monteverdi published the fifth of his 9 books of madrigals. It opened with what had already become an infamous piece, Crude Amarelli. Harsh and unpleasing to the ear was how theorist and critic Artusi had described it. It's hard to listen from a similar standpoint over 400 years later. But close your eyes, though perhaps not if you're driving. Purge your souls of Brahms, Mozart, Bach, even Purcell. Think of Palestrina, and then take the Artusi test to see how shocked you can be by this.
Oh,
Concerto Italiano singing Cruel Amaryllis, the opening madrigal from Monteverdi's fifth book of five-part madrigals. Monteverdi arrived at the Mantuan court in 1590 at the age of just 23. He was a player of the theorbo, the large lute, and also the viol. The year after his death, his playing was described as a new Orpheus with the sound of his viol, in which he had no equals. He already had a number of publications under his belt, and his second and third books of madrigals were published soon after his arrival. But it would then be 11 long years before his extraordinary fourth book was printed, closely followed by his fifth, both arriving just after the first operas had been performed. It's not clear whether arch-theorist Artusi had actually heard a performance when he criticised that madrigal, but the passages he was taking issue with were still unaccompanied madrigals. Just a few pages later in the fifth book, though, Monteverdi nailed his modernist colours to the mast by using the new style, with a simple instrumental accompaniment providing the harmony, so freeing the voices from having to provide every note in the chord themselves, and allowing them more soloistic expression. This presumably sent Artusi absolutely apoplectic.
Sofferto si prima il sistema, la prima la sua, la mia.
Ah, love's wound never heals. And already we hear just how intense a setting Monteverdi can create out of a fairly insubstantial poem. That was the other mixed-voice Italian ensemble, La Veneziana. Like many creators of art, Monteverdi was rather too busy making music to find much time to write about it. His fifth book opens with a short declaration from him making just that point, but adding, for Artusi's benefit, "To show that I do not compose my works haphazardly, I have written a reply, which will appear as soon as I've revised it." He famously went on to announce that his composing was of a new type, whose title he claimed as his own, the Second Practice. He never found time to explain exactly what this was, but 2 years later his younger brother Giulio wrote a detailed rebuttal of Artusi's arguments, quoting Plato in support and pointing out that what his brother had done was to put the music at the service of the words. This, he said, was the Second Practice, a way of writing where the rules of traditional counterpoint could be bent to express the text. And he quoted many other composers as exponents of it, including the Netherlander Ciprian de Rore and others at the nearby court of Ferrara, including one Carlo Gesualdo. But this Second Practice wasn't the same thing as the new accompanied or basso continuo style. It was simply a mindset in which musical license was allowed in the service of bringing the text to life. This could be done just as well with or without instruments. Here's another of the unaccompanied pieces which beautifully makes that point, despite Artusi describing its beginning as a certain amusing manner which induces men to laughter. "My soul languished, dying, when one more ravishing looked at me so mercifully that it kept me alive. And its eyes seemed to say, 'Ah, why are you consumed so? For you yourself are my love.'"
Thank you.
The very affective style of Concerto Italiano, perfectly suiting the intense imagined thoughts in Guarini's poem Era l'anima mia, set in Monteverdi's fifth book of madrigals, our focus on the early music show today. We're going to have a listen now to more of the accompanied pieces from the book. There are six of these, and they're printed immediately after the a cappella pieces, Monteverdi very clearly setting them apart. Scholars get reasonably excited about the fact that this book is the first glance we have at Monteverdi's accompanied style. It comes just 2 years before Orfeo, his first opera. The very first operas had been performed some 5 years before, in 1600, directly in response to a Florentine group of writers, theorists, poets and musicians who were great discussers of the arts and who were trying to create a modern style of musical drama. Their conclusion had been that vocal counterpoint, the standard language of motets and madrigals, was intrinsically undramatic. Why, asked the lutenist Vincenzo Galilei, the father of the astronomer, should we persist in expressing the feelings of a single person through polyphony, when the ancients evoked the most lively passions with only a single voice supported by a lyre? We must renounce counterpoint and return to the simplicity of the word. I'm not sure about simplicity in this group of accompanied pieces. In fact, we hear some quite demanding solos. The group itself tells a little story of attraction. Beautifulized with a starting point, and now, in Troppo ben può, the paradox of love's power is affirmed. Run away, fuggilo, before love catches you. But then, ah, what is the point of running away when sweet temptation steals upon me?
Thank you.
Amor si giusto sei, the speaker complaining to the goddess of love that if she is just, he should receive love as well as giving it. The Concert of Music, directed by Anthony Rulli, with Emma Kirkby on the top line, showing some extremely deft touches of ornamentation. Despite the development of a reciting style by theorists and early opera composers, when we listen to the accompanied pieces in Monteverdi's fifth book, there's little reciting to be heard. Instead, we're hearing real melody and often quite florid writing in a style which Monteverdi's group at the Mantuan court would have felt comfortable with from its own ornamented versions of their regular repertoire. So I'd say at this stage that Monteverdi is trying on these modern clothes quite carefully. By the way, did you know that despite being maestro, Monteverdi was paid less than the singers in the Mantuan ensemble? But I digress. The sequence continues with a still happier moment. D'amo mia vita, this remembered phrase of a lover transforming the speaker. I love you, my love. Ah, voce di dolcezza e di diletto, sound of sweetness and delight.
Thank you. dolcezza ed il diletto, prendi la tosta, amore, stampala nel mio petto. Spiri solo per lei, spiri solo per lei, l'anima mia.
I Fagiolini in Tamo Mia Vita, Monteverdi's setting of poet Giambattista Guarini, who spent much of his working life at the flourishing nearby court of Ferrara, as did the poet Tasso. This court also had a famous dancing group and a groundbreaking female vocal ensemble on whom the Mantuan consort had been modelled, so it was a real hothouse of artistic invention. Guarini's great work is his pastoral soap opera Il Pastor Fido, The Faithful Shepherd, first published in 1589, and containing a myriad of subplots that would keep the most ardent Archers fan happy. It was apparently a favourite of Monteverdi's boss in Mantua, the Duke of Gonzaga, and Guarini was invited to the Mantuan court in 1591 with a view to putting on a performance of the whole play. This didn't come to fruition until 7 years later, but when it did, music was part of the performance, including Gastoldi's setting of the Blind Man's Bluff game. Monteverdi hadn't become maestro by this time, but at least one of his Pastor Fido settings comes from this period, and possibly more. It's just difficult to say whether they were part of the production or inspired by it. In fact, the text of most of his unaccompanied madrigals in Book 5 are from this play. There's a cycle of pieces about the characters Dorinda and Silvio, and several exchanges between Amaryllis and Mirtillo. We heard Mirtillo at the start of the programme calling on cruel Amaryllis. Here, she laments how they've been separated. And at once, we're back in the style of the late 16th century world of Monteverdi's teacher, Jacques de Vert, with a long colouring of an individual word, crudelissima, most cruel one, its repetitions and extreme dissonance distorting the shape of the poem, but treating us to powerful musical expression.
Come sta il cuor di questa,
perché io...
O Mirtillo, sung by La Veneziana. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Robert Hollingworth, and we're looking at Monteverdi's groundbreaking fifth book of madrigals. Today we've heard two British groups, the Consort of Music, directed by Anthony Rulli, recording in the 1980s, and my own ensemble, I Fagiolini, from more recent times. The clean sound of the Consort was a revelation when its records first hit the stands. Their singers were also the first to use contemporary ornamentation in this repertoire, articulated from the throat, as taught by Monteverdi's contemporary, Caccini. Then in the 1990s, modern listeners were able to hear a top-quality native Italian ensemble singing this repertoire, Concerto Italiano. Their director, the keyboard player Rinaldo Alessandrini, brought to this music a strong poetic touch with an almost recited feel to the text, not afraid to interrupt the music's flow with strong interpretative gestures. Since then, La Veneziana have taken the lead, with several of the same singers as Concerto Italiano, but directed from within by the countertenor Claudio Cavina. Their approach is often beautifully intimate. The different approaches made by performers can make a really big difference to any listening experience in terms of phrasing and vocal colour. But in this music, it can have an even stronger effect. There's also the choice of continuo instruments, which Monteverdi doesn't specify. Here's the opening of one of the pieces we heard earlier. The Consort of Music realised this bass with just a single lute. Now his Concerto Italiano, they use the stronger sounding harpsichord. Lastly, I Fagiolini. We chose the combination of two theorbos, large lutes, and a lirone, the multi-stringed viol, that sounds like a whole consort of them on its own. None of these is necessarily right, but it does strongly affect what you hear and therefore feel is Monteverdi. Here's a more interpretational example. In Me più dolce il penar, Mirtillo, separated from Amaryllis, opines that even the pain she brings is sweeter than the pleasures that others can. The word for sweet is dolce, and Monteverdi colours this with a suave passing dissonance in the bass. The Consort of Music feels that what Monteverdi has written is enough. Me più dolce nar per amarilli. Me più dolce. Concerto Italiano significantly lengthens that moment, though. They're also at a different pitch, but that's another story.
Yeah.
Concerto Italiano in Monteverdi's Me più dolce il penar. Mirtillo, the male lead in Guarini's Il Pastor Fido, opining that he couldn't wish for another woman even if he wanted to. And I sympathise. Our final offering of these Monteverdi settings from Guarini's play is a soliloquy by Mirtillo, again for five singers. Ch'io t'ami, I love you, more than my life. If you don't know it, cruel one, ask the wild beasts or the stones of these mountains which I've so often moved with the sound of my lamenting. To keep this text really clear, Monteverdi writes a sort of ensemble declamation at times, so any other tricks have to work inside that limited texture. He allows himself expressive suspended notes, and then makes these more dissonant by adding wrong notes to colour words like fere, wild beasts. Like his Mantuan inspiration, Jacques de Vert, Monteverdi quite pictorially paints images such as the word for mountains by vocal lines whose craggy contour actually outlines on the page the shape of a mountain, a sort of music for the eyes and in-joke for the singers. Mirtillo hears no answer to his complaining, so he continues, "But you feel not a spark of pity. Have you no answer? If you say nothing, at least say die." And then, in a doubly brilliant ending, Monteverdi does two things that change everything. Firstly, he replaces the group recitation with his old friend polyphony, which is better at tortured sentiments. The other thing is that he moves from the Dorian mode, to us a sort of minor feel, but to a Renaissance composer, the mode for noble sentiment, and replaces it with a major key, which these days we hear as more positive and relaxed, but in Renaissance theory could be a harsh colour. This, O villainous love, is the extreme of wickedness, that such an unyielding girl answers me not, yet you won't pronounce my death.
Yes,
A Monteverdi cycle from Guarini's Il Pastor Fido, sung by the British ensemble I Fagiolini, directed by me, Robert Hollingworth. Nicely showing that, as Monteverdi declared years later, all the fuss about the second practice, what dissonance you can or can't get away with, what style you're writing in, it's all a means to an end, that of finding la via naturale all'imitazione, the natural way of imitation. Let's finish with the last work in Monteverdi's fifth book, which follows tradition for final pieces by being for an enlarged ensemble. Questi Vaghi Concenti is for 2 4-part choirs, joined by an extra lamenting singer in the second part, the whole thing set up by a string sinfonia. The text was certainly Monteverdi's way of summing up what he'd created in the book, but was it also a love song to his wife Claudia, who sang in the Mantuan Ensemble? These lovely songs that the birds sing are burning desires of love. Oh, that I could lament as sweetly, so that the only one I wish would love me accepted my weeping. Then I'd weep for ever. I Fagiolini with the strings of Baroque Solistina.
Final madrigal, Questi Vaghi Concenti, from Monteverdi's fifth book of madrigals, performed there by I Fagiolini with the strings of Baroque Solistina. And that ends today's programme. It was presented by Robert Hollingworth and produced by Rebecca Bean. And just to say, you can find full details of all the music in today's programme on the Radio 3 website, bbc.co.uk/Radio 3. Just follow the links to the early music show. In next Saturday's programme, Lucy Skeeping concludes our monthly look at major Baroque operas with a focus on Jean-Philippe Rameau's comic masterpiece, Platé. That's the early music show next Saturday afternoon, just after the 1 o'clock news. Meanwhile, this evening, we've drama on three.
In 1950s America, an elderly preacher is writing to his young son.
If you're a grown man when you read this, I'll have been gone a very long time.
BBC Radio 3 presents a new dramatization of an influential American novel, the winner of the 2005 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction, a subtle tale of spirituality, of family relationships, and of the universal nature of love and death.
I'd leave them all on Christmas Eve and walk 1,000 miles just for the sight of your face.
Gilead. Drama on 3. Tonight at 8 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
Coming up to 2 minutes past 2, and for the next couple of hours, we're in the company of Chichi Nwanaku and this week's pick of your Radio 3 requests.
Hello, and thanks for joining me for a programme filled with a variety of feelings. Joy, loss, nostalgia and celebration, all represented in the music you've chosen from across the Northern Hemisphere, apart from a bit of southern heat with my own choice of Piazzolla later in the programme. So let's start with Sally Birch in Nailsworth, Gloucestershire. She'd like to hear Richard Wagner's Tannhauser Overture, happy memories of a trip to the Vienna Opera 10 years ago. And what a place to hear this incredible music, the culmination of an immense project which Wagner wrote, consumed me with a sensual excitement that held my blood and nerves at fever pitch.